Good morning. My name is Kaylin Moran, and I'm the resident director in Glide Crawford. Yeah. And this morning, I get the privilege of introducing our speaker, our first speaker for Great Commission Congress, Sean Castleberry. Sean is the director of Mission Year, like Jeannie mentioned, which is a year-long urban ministry program that places Christian young adults in under-resourced neighborhoods and cities across America to participate in the Great Commandment and to learn how to love God and love others within the context of the city. I first met Sean the year after I graduated from Asbury. I moved to South Chicago to participate in Mission Year, and I lived with a team of four other young women, and I spent a year learning about the issues facing the urban poor and the history of injustice that has led us to the current reality, that the current realities of racism, broken justice systems, lack of affordable housing, violence, addiction, and inadequate job opportunities in our cities here in America. My time in South Chicago certainly shook my privileged middle-class white understanding of God, but thankfully, during my time of some serious doubt that I walked through, Sean served as a spiritual mentor for me, and helped me to discern what I believed about God, what was true and biblical, and what was comfortable and cultured. Everything in me wanted to walk away from this pruning process, but thankfully, I had a leader who expected me to show up to the sanctification process in my own life, and I am deeply grateful that I did. I had a kingdom leader who, a kingdom leader will call you to the edge of your experience of God and invite you to walk out a little further and realize that God is big and that you don't have to fear coming to the end of him. That person for me in my life, one of those people has been Sean, and he's going to speak to us this morning. And so I invite you to listen as he is going to share a lot with us. I know that it will be fruitful in your own life if you will take the time to engage this morning. Sean and his wife, Jen, are both Asbury alumni, and he currently serves on our alumni board. He's also a graduate of Asbury Seminary, and he's currently working on a doctorate of ministry from McCormick Seminary. Would you join me inviting Sean Castleberry to speak to us this morning?
Good morning, Asbury. I'm so glad to be here at Asbury with so many familiar faces and sacred places and significant moments that happened here in my own life. And I'm honored to be asked to speak today. This is an exciting week because it's all about getting God's heart for the world. This could be any other week, or it could be one of those pivotal weeks where God gets our attention and reveals part of God's heart to us. We need God's heart because mission starts with God. For God so loved the world. Mission reminds us that there's no part of the world that God doesn't love. Mission reminds us that the world is not to be feared or avoided, but entered into and loved. A prayer I prayed when I was at Asbury was, God, I'll go anywhere you want me to go. I'll do anything you want me to do. It's a dangerous prayer, but it's a transformational prayer. And that prayer led me from Wilmore, Kentucky, to the west side of Chicago. A little bit different. It led me to the work with Mission Year that Kaylin was talking about. See, we have to talk about the city because if we don't talk about the city, we're going to miss out on half of God's heart because half the world's population lives in cities. So today I'm going to share some stories. I want to give witness to what the city is teaching me about God's heart. I was giving a pep talk to one of our Mission Year teams in Philly as they were starting their year of ministry. And I noticed one young woman's face was getting more dejected the more I talked. And I was thinking to myself, either I'm the worst motivational speaker ever, or something else is going on here. So I ended up stopping my talk and said, are you okay? And she said, I feel unworthy. When she said that, I found myself responding instinctively, "Oh, is that all? Everyone feels that. I feel that." See, the truth is, we're all unworthy. No one's qualified for God's mission, but no one's disqualified either. You see, we're not perfect people helping those broken people. We're all those broken people in desperate need of God's grace. My working definition of grace is being loved in our brokenness. Isn't that the gospel? Romans 5:8 says, "Christ demonstrated his love for us in this, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." That means in our deepest, darkest, dirtiest state, Christ loved us then. Christ loved us in our brokenness. Before you do any mission, you need to know you are loved in your brokenness. It is this grace that transforms us. And mission is loving the world in its brokenness. As we give and receive grace, we're transformed together, and the world is transformed. See, sometimes I think we associate mission with guilt, right? Mission speakers like me are supposed to guilt you into sponsoring a child or giving up your summer for Jesus. But it's not about guilt. It's about grace. I received this grace from God when I was a freshman at Asbury. I remember I was sitting right up there in the cheap seats. And I made my way down while they were still playing the music, and I came down this aisle, and right here, I experienced the grace of God. God's love for me in my brokenness. And it transformed my relationship with God. But I also needed to experience this grace from the community that I was going into in the city. I had a lot of guilt going into the city. In case some of you haven't realized, I'm white. You may not be able to tell in the back there. See, I knew that I, as a white male, I had a lot of power and privilege in our society. And I was going into a majority African-American community that had been denied a lot of these same privileges. I was aware of how our nation has historically not protected black lives, and in some cases still doesn't. So I felt a lot of shame around that. Even though I felt called to the city, I felt a lot of fear and anxiety about how a white boy from Kentucky would be received. I expected to be treated with hostility. I truly felt like I deserved to be hated for all that people who looked like me had done to people who looked like the community I was entering. I felt like I had to work extra hard to compensate for the centuries of oppression that were done. But no amount of work from even the most eager white person could undo that. I needed to be shown grace, a grace I didn't deserve. A man named Stanley from the neighborhood welcomed me. He accepted me. He loved me in my brokenness, and he helped put my passion to use in the neighborhood. I was transformed by this grace. No longer would I serve out of fear or guilt. I was freed to love. That's what grace does. It frees us to be loved and to love others in their brokenness. I'm learning God sends us into mission so we can be transformed. Think about Peter and Cornelius in Acts 10. It's an amazing story. Peter doesn't have God's heart for the Gentiles at this time. At this point, Peter has no room in his heart or his theology for the Gentiles. But while Peter is in the city, God gives him a vision and shows him how much bigger God's heart is. It includes the Gentiles. Peter is sent to Cornelius, not only so Cornelius and his household can be saved, but so Peter can be transformed. That's what mission is. We're sent so that we can be changed alongside those we're sent to serve. As I got involved in my community in Chicago, God showed me more of his heart for the city. I built a relationship with Stanley, and he shared his story with me. Stanley had been falsely accused and sentenced to 9 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. The prosecutor at his trial accused him of transporting drugs from Columbia to Chicago. But the thing was, he'd never been outside of Chicago. And the judge, during the trial, was reading a newspaper, giving the impression to Stanley that he didn't even care about his case. The all-white jury of his peers found him guilty. He ended up spending 2.5 years of that prison sentence before his wife and the church body was able to get clemency from the governor. As soon as he got out of prison, he started Hope House for other men that were leaving prison so that they'd have a place to land and get their lives together so they don't end up back in prison. And because his wife struggled while he was gone, they started a ministry for youth and families. Being involved with this ministry the last 10 years has taught me about God's heart for the prisoner. I've learned how the prison system is a destructive force in the lives of many families in our community. I was shocked to learn that America, the land of liberty, has more people incarcerated than any other nation in the world. One prisoner told me, there's no mercy in the American justice system. And even among Christians, I witnessed the lack of concern and mercy. That's why I love the new class, the Merciful Class. As Christians, we should be the most merciful people on the planet because we have been shown mercy. I came across passages like Hebrews 13:3 that says, remember those in prison as if you were there yourself. The early church took that so seriously that in the second century, when one of their brothers was incarcerated, they did everything they could to get him out. And when they couldn't get him out, they ended up bribing the guards so they could sleep in the cell with their brother, just to show solidarity. That's a picture of the church. What if we went in the world and entered into the suffering of other people? We took on their suffering as if it was our own. I think that's what Paul means when he says, we're the body of Christ. When one of us suffers, we all suffer. So I'm learning to see that we're all a human family. We're all created in the image of God. People are not projects. They're brothers and sisters. And what affects them affects us. This really sunk in early in my time in Chicago. I was going downtown with some of our Mission Year volunteers for a homeless sleep out. We were going downtown to raise awareness and demand more funding from the city for beds for the homeless. At the time, there were 25,000 homeless youth in Illinois and only 150 beds. When we got down there, I noticed that everyone there was dressed like me in mall clothes, and we looked like college students. So I asked our volunteers if they wanted to go sleep with the homeless. If we're going to do a homeless sleep out, it made sense to do it with the homeless. They agreed. So we made our way down to Lower Wacker Drive. Has anybody been to Chicago? Awesome. At Lower Wacker Drive, there are all these winding streets underneath the city in the bowels of Chicago. And so we made our way down to Lower Wacker Drive, to the place where I knew that they were sleeping. I'd never been there, but I've heard. So I made my way down there, and I saw as we got to the corner a row of beds, an encampment, bed after bed after bed. So I didn't really know what to do, but I figured I'd just go there and see if they have any room for us. Before I could say anything, a woman ran to meet us. And she put her hand out and she said, "Hi, I'm Foots. I'm the first lady of Lower Wacker Drive." And we shook her hand and we said, "Hey, we're looking for a place to stay tonight." She said, "Come with me." So she took us down this street, and we were passing each bed, and I was wondering, I wonder where we're going to end up staying. Maybe we're going to stay at the inn. We just got here. So we're passing bed after bed after bed, and finally, we leave all the beds and all the people, and now we're going deeper into Lower Wacker Drive. Now I'm getting a little nervous. Now I'm wondering, is she going to take us down here to get jumped? I'm starting to in my mind, I'm thinking, can I take her? But as the fearless leader, you never show, fear, right? You just fake it like you know what you're doing. That's leadership. That's what I learned at Asbury. So we end up getting down to this little side street, and then I realize what was happening. I see a little bed down here. See, Foots had street cred. So she had this nice piece of real estate by herself, far away from everybody else. And she was inviting us into her home on the street. So she asked us to sit down, and she put a blanket down for us. And then she started reaching into her bag. Her only possession was this black trash bag, and she starts pulling things out of it and giving it to us. She gave one of the women that was with me a pair of socks. She gave another person a blanket. She gave another person a purse. And we were humbled by her generosity. So then she asked us, "So what are you doing here?" So I said, "We're just looking for a place to sleep tonight." And she said, "Why are you really here?" She could see right through me, right? So I said, "Okay, we're here to sleep out on the street, to try to understand a little bit better what it's like to be homeless." And then I kind of braced myself for her reaction. She said, "You think you can understand what it's like to be homeless? Spending one night? I've been homeless 27 years. You don't know what it's like to be homeless. You don't know Jack." But she didn't say Jack. I was humbled again. And I said, "You're right. We don't know Jack. But we're here to understand as much as we can." It was a small opening, just enough for grace to get in and help us better understand a little bit more. So then she said, "Are you guys with a church?" Why do you think she was asking that? "Do you have some agenda? Are you here?" And we said, "Well, we're Christians, but we're not here with a church. We're here to just be with you." And when I said that, she softened. And she started opening up. And she started sharing with us that her daughter's birthday was coming up and that she was brokenhearted that she couldn't be there. And she started crying and tears were coming in her eyes, a mixture of shame and sadness. And we sat there awkwardly on the blanket, trying to comprehend the depths of 27 years of sorrow. As we were sitting there, a car came by. There was a parking garage close by, and a black BMW came up. And I remember looking at the car, and the driver just stopped and was looking at us. He didn't stop to offer help or see if we needed anything. He was just looking at us and then drove off. And in that moment, we just felt like I was worlds apart. Him separated by glass and heated seats and all the luxuries he could want, and us sitting on the cold pavement with Foots. In that moment, status symbols didn't mean anything. They're not worth anything compared to human bodies trying to survive on cold city streets. It was time to go to bed, and we moved down and made our bed, and it was the worst night's sleep I've ever had. My bones were aching from trying to get comfortable. Every time I turned, it was just painful. There was lights overhead that shone that were just on all night. And so it was hard to even shut my eyes and get a good night's sleep. The stench down there was terrible, and it was absorbed into our clothes. We woke up the next morning, and we made our way back to our warm homes and our soft beds. And as we were walking silently, I just kept thinking, how could Foots endure this for so long? And I felt like the Spirit of God was helping me ask a better question. How could you as a society allow this to happen so long? So I've been challenged. I learned an uncomfortable truth that I've never forgotten and that has served me well since. When it comes to the homeless and other groups forced to find a way to survive, I don't know Jack. And it's best that I reserve my judgment until I've spent some time in their shoes. I'm learning that having a heart for the city means having a heart for justice. It's not enough to care for those who are suffering. We have to interrupt the systems that are causing the suffering. It's not enough to care for the homeless. We have to ask the questions, what's causing homelessness in the first place? To conclude, the city is helping me be a better Christian. The city is challenging my assumptions of who is deserving and who is undeserving of grace. The city is showing me love is at the heart of the gospel. There's no Christianity, there's no holiness apart from love. In fact, I know I can be just as self-centered in my pursuit of holiness as I am in my pursuit of sin. It's love that frees us from the prison of self. Martin Luther King Jr. said, a person has not started to live until they rise above their narrow individualistic concerns to the broader concern of humanity. This is the movement of love. This is the movement of mission. Moving beyond concern for just ourselves, our families, our church, our community, our people group, our country, and keep going outward until our heart embraces the world. This mission takes the rest of our lives, but it starts now. Mission is not just for a few majors. We're all called to mission. To let ourselves be loved in our brokenness. To love others in their brokenness. To see those who are criminalized and demonized and ostracized as our brothers and sisters. And to stand with them in their suffering. To enter into the world and love it without judgment and interrupt injustice. We need everyone to be involved, to find where your gifts can be of service to the broader humanity. If you're a teacher, you don't have to go where all the other teachers are going. Go to the school that needs you most. If you're a lawyer, you could still be a lawyer. But what about defending those who have no one to defend them? If you're an artist, use your art to amplify the voices of those who are voiceless. Every skill is needed in the city. We even had a marketing major come to the city, and she thought, I'm going to have to put my marketing degree to the side to do missions. But what she discovered is nonprofits in the city were in desperate need of marketing. And she ended up using her degree the whole year. It's not about giving up your career. It's about finding your vocation. Your career is where you make your living, but your vocation is where you find your purpose. Purpose is where you find use for your gifts and skills in service to humanity. When we use our passions and gifts for the service of humanity, we find our most fulfilling life. That's what I want for you. I want you to have a fulfilling life. And that's when our life becomes mission. I want to close with a Franciscan benediction, a blessing for us. May God bless us with discomfort at easy answers, half-truths, and superficial relationships, so that we may live from deep within our hearts. May God bless us with anger at injustice, oppression, and exploitation of God's creations, so that we may work for justice, freedom, and peace. May God bless us with tears to shed for those who suffer pain, rejection, hunger, and war, so that we may reach out our hands to comfort them and to turn their pain into joy. And may God bless us with just enough foolishness to believe that we can make a difference in the world, so that we can do what others claim cannot be done, to bring justice and kindness to all our children and all our neighbors who are poor. Amen. We're going to sing a last song. And if you are feeling led to come to the altar for prayer, it's open. If you need grace, if you need to be loved in your brokenness, come down here and we will pray with you. If you need to settle a question in your heart of, is your life yours, or are you giving your life to God for his use? Come down here. We're going to have a moment open to sing before we're dismissed. And if you need to, we're just going to start singing. If you need to go to class, go to class. If you want to stick around, stick around. And we're going to be here. I'm going to be here. We're going to pray. And we're going to, anybody who needs to experience the grace of God, we want you to have that experience. This is the moment. Now is the moment. We'll just let the Spirit work and do what God loves to do.